Welcome again to our Maori program. A perfect day, a calm, clear evening, and the spectacle of uniforms and Maoris dressed in their traditional costume made the 128th anniversary of the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi a memorable occasion on Tuesday the 6th of February. For the thousands of people who came to Waitangi to watch the pageantry, the day could scarcely have been better. People thronged the beaches and the Treaty House grounds, and the crowd built up as the afternoon wore on. The Governor-General, Sir Arthur Porritt, arrived shortly before 7 p.m., resplendent in his white uniform, and accompanied by Lady Porritt and their daughter, Joanna. He was challenged in traditional Maori fashion by Ben Gage of Te Whanau a Apanui, followed by a haka and then a pōwhiri, or welcome, by the Whakatohea concert party of Opotiki. Mr. Henare Teua, one of the NZBC narrators at the ceremony, explained the significance of the challenge while it was being performed.
The challenge itself harks back from very early days, the times when the Maoris were in their strongholds. If they saw a party advancing towards their stronghold, to ascertain whether they were friendly or whether they were not friendly, they would send out a warrior, such as Ben Gage now, who would place a dart on the ground just to keep it. If the visitor is friendly, he'll come forward and pick up the dart. His Excellency has picked up the dart, so he comes in friendship. Now the challenge has been completed, and as is traditional, seeing this personage is friendly, then he should. And so the Whakatohea Maori group go into the main haka or haka taparahi, and this will be Te Rā o Te Kāwana, or the Day of the Governor.
The first address was given by Mr. J.C. Henare, DSO, CBE, and a member of the Waitangi National Trust Board. He speaks first to his own people and then to the Assembly.
Te tai toke rau, te nā koutou e taune. Ngā iwi o te motu, te nā koutou e taune I runga I te marae tapu, o tātou mātua, o tātou tūpuna. Te iwi Māori, puta noa te motu, e noho mai nei o tātou marae kāinga, e whakāta mai nei ngā mahi, o tēnei ahiahi, I runga I tō koutou marae, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou. Tēnei te mihi nei kia koutou ki te iwi Māori, mō koutou I haere mai I te rā nei, I te whakanui, I te rā tapu, I te marae tapu, te wāhi haina te ai, te tiriti o Waitangi. Te tai toke rau, tēnei te mihi nei kia koutou, e manaaki nei I ngā iwi o te motu. Mā wai koia hoki, e manaaki ngā iwi o te motu. Mā urā, ma te tai toke rau. I haina tia te tiriti o Waitangi, hiroto I āko I te tai toke rau, ā kā hora ki te motu katoa. Ka eke mai te motu, ki runga ia tāua, mā tāua e manaaki, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, e te tai toke rau. Aha ko tātou porarutanga, e pai anna, waihoana te tangata, kia kōrero nei ona whakaaro. Riria te riri, ā, kā uki te pai. E harai te mea kā roa ngā mihi kia koutou. He oi noko te whakatau poto atu ia koutou, ka tatū mai nei, te rungo o Waitangi. Your Excellencies, on behalf of the Maori people. It gives me much pleasure in extending to Your Excellency, Your Gracious Lady, and Your daughter a very warm and sincere welcome on this, Your first official visit to Waitangi. It is both fitting and proper that the first official welcome by the Maori people be accorded you on this historic and hallowed spot. New Zealand has given birth to many distinguished sons and daughters. We welcome you home as the most distinguished, occupying, as you do, the highest position in the land as Her Majesty the Queen's representative. We pray that your term of office in your native land be a rewarding and most enjoyable one. Welcome, then, thrice welcome. May I have the honor, sir, of respectfully requesting Your Excellency to convey to the Queen the affection and undivided loyalty of her Maori people. To your predecessor, Sir Bernard Ferguson, Lady Ferguson, and their son, Geordie, our greetings and good wishes. We are gathered here this evening to celebrate the 128th anniversary of the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi and the birth of a nation, our nation. The removal by legislation of certain and difficult obstacles to full equality with a Pākehā sometimes ruffles otherwise calm Maori waters. The Maori has grown up, and indeed all New Zealanders have grown up, for we witness on this historic spot the first New Zealander to occupy such a high position as our Governor General. I need hardly remind the Maori of the fact that when we accept privileges, we must also accept responsibilities. I am confident that the Maori will rise above himself and continue to take his place and play his full part in celebrating the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. The treaty is sacrosanct. Let us keep it that way. Let the Maori people be worthy descendants of their illustrious ancestors who ceded sovereignty of these islands to Her Majesty Queen Victoria. In conclusion, it is the fervent hope of the Maori people that Waitangi Day be made New Zealand's national day. We hope and pray that government and our several provinces will consider this matter very earnestly. Thank you.
Mr. McIntyre deputised for the Prime Minister, Mr. K.J. Holyoake. He paid tribute to Lord Bledisloe, who in 1934 presented the Treaty House to the nation, a symbol by which both Maori and Pākehā could meet on equal terms together.
This today is an occasion in which we should all again give thanks to Lord and Lady Bledisloe for the gift that they made to this nation, New Zealand, which was the catalyst of reminding us what Waitangi Day can mean to us all. The gift of this piece of land to we, the people of New Zealand, by those two people, revitalized what had become just a significant piece of history into something which is today alive in New Zealand's history and has a message with it. The message is that we remind ourselves that on February the 6th in 1840, Governor Hobson, here on this very spot, met with 46 of the paramount chiefs of the northern portion of New Zealand, and there are descendants of theirs here today, and first signed the Treaty of Waitangi, which decided the future of this land. By June of that year, this treaty had been taken throughout New Zealand, and 512 chiefs had signed it. It even was signed in the South Island. By so doing, the Māoris accepted British rule and the protection that the Crown could give. They accepted the rights and privileges as British subjects, and they accepted British law, a thing which had been forced upon the Scots 100 years before. The British government set out to found a colony on a just footing, determined to prevent exploitation. The result, a new land, a new concept, and a nation born. Since then, there have been many trials and tribulations, arguments and fights, but I would ask you to consider what family doesn't have its problems and what husband doesn't finally answer his wife back. The course was set to produce the land which we here to know today know and which we have come to be very proud of as New Zealanders. Today, instead of fighting, we stand side by side in a common purpose, and Māori and Pākehā over the last half century have stood side by side and fought to protect this beautiful country. In 1932, because Lord Bledisloe gave this piece of land to the nation, a deed was signed, and this area was set aside. It was preserved for all time for the future for we New Zealanders. Since then, that piece of land has been improved, and today there is a thriving farm. There is a fine forest, and there are recreation areas. And as I look into the future of the Waitangi Trust Board, with this trust that has been thrust upon them, I like to think that someday, perhaps, they might take on the care and the maintenance of some of the wonderful areas that are in the Bay of Islands of such historic interest to the Māori people and to we, the Pākehā. The beaches, the islands, and the spots which are known to many should be preserved for the generations to come. On this spot, 128 years ago, a new nation was created. In its early days, it was troubled. In recent times, it has been threatened. I am sure that its future is assured if we all realize that we have a continuing responsibility to work for and with each other. Waitangi Day will continue to be the symbol of our nationhood. We stand proud to remember the spirit of Waitangi and the words spoken by Hobson. Hei iwi kotahi tatau. We are one people.
We are the manuhi me hawaii. Wai e ae e mai.
By the time Sir Arthur Porritt made his speech, it was night, and the grounds were illuminated by numerous lights focused on the Treaty House.
My friends, Tenakutu, this, as has been said, is my first Waitangi Day, and surely Waitangi Day is New Zealand's national day. For me, this has a very special significance in that I am a New Zealander born. On this wonderful occasion, I call to mind in particular three of my predecessors. Captain Hobson, who 128 years ago, on this spot, signed the famous treaty that we are here today to commemorate. Lord Bledisloe, whose interest in land in general and in this lovely land of ours in particular, by his generous gift, made this celebration possible. And thirdly, my very good friend, and your very good friend, who was so much with you here this time last year, Sir Bernard Ferguson, who I would suggest to you gave this ceremony a meaning that it never had before. There is, too, one other administrator that I should like to remember in passing, and that is Colonel Wynyard. And this for two reasons. He was the first administrator for Sir George Grey of New Zealand as a self-governing colony, a national entity in 1852. And he was the great-grandfather of our friend Colonel Henry, who has this evening spoken so delightfully and so feelingly on behalf of his and our great race, the Maori. It has been said that change is the only constant of our time, and certainly the tempo of change in the last 50 or 60 years has accelerated almost to meteoric. Mechanization, scientific technology, speed in its many forms, have all been crowding in on us more and more rapidly. Not only has man's environment been radically changed, but also his approach to it. And yet, as Sir Robert Menzies said quite lately in his new book, man still retains the sense of obligation for the destiny of his race. There still exists unselfishness, chivalry, and the instinct for beauty, for harmony, and for justice. Surely these sentiments still apply to both Pākehā and to Māori. Whatever materialistic forces may have molded the way of life of either race, their pride and tradition and their appreciation of basic cultures remain unblemished. What has happened in that interim of 128 years since the famous treaty was signed, such a very relatively short time in history, is the sharing of experience, both in peace and in war, and of the benefit of education, of well-tried legal systems, social reforms, and scientific development. Only a fool would expect that in a few years, such few years as this, a fusion of two races so individual in character could take place. But both have attributes, some in common. Both have failings, for both are human, and therefore fallible. What has been achieved by that utopian experiment, the Treaty of Waitangi, that odd mixture of imperialism linked hand in hand with humanitarianism, is a degree of interracial mutual understanding and respect that has set an example to an unsettled and largely unhappy world. Looking round on this beautiful scene, on this beautiful evening, one wonders how much has really changed in that interval between the third year of the reign of the young Queen Victoria and the 16th year of the reign of another young and gracious Queen, Elizabeth II. And may I say in passing that your request for a message to be sent to Her Majesty will be done as soon as I possibly can. In front of the Marquis in 1840 stood the uniformed governor and his small service detachment. With him were the French bishop and the Anglican missionaries. Facing him were the massed chiefs and warriors of the Maori race. And watching were the English settlers and traders, not a few of whom, incidentally, were Australian. Not a very different gathering, surely, from that of tonight. And perhaps two points are worthy of special note. The ecumenical religious representation and the presence of representatives from that large and friendly island across the Tasman Sea, both of which facts would seem to have continued and perhaps even deeper significance today. Reading again, as I have, the Treaty of Waitangi, one is amazed by its simplicity, three articles only, and by its symbolic significance. Its moral purpose was and is crystal clear, whatever may have been its validity as a legal document, a matter upon which I certainly would not wish to express an opinion. It was a promissory note of mutual trust. The Maoris, as British subjects, were not only to be constitutionally ruled by the Queen, but also officially protected by her. Captain Hobson became not only the governor of the new colony, but also the consul of the Maori chiefs. The fruits of this somewhat philanthropic document are before us all today, and the study of them can reasonably bring pride and satisfaction. Much of the fruit has ripened well. As Sir Bernard said last year, New Zealand has now grown up. It has made by its own efforts, remarkable efforts, considering how small its size is, both geographically and population-wise, a place for itself in international councils. And likewise, may I say, New Zealanders have grown up and spread their influence far beyond these shores in many spheres of activity. And when I speak of New Zealanders, I mean both Maori and Pākehā. But not all the fruit has by any means yet matured. Much has still to be achieved in recognition of international responsibility, in development of natural assets, in constructive exploitation of the brains and the brawn of this most favored and much loved little country. I feel we should look further forward to a time beyond today's generation, when a second crop of fruit will be forthcoming from that tree so securely planted at the time of the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi. This will not come about automatically, or even by an increase in population, power, and prestige, but by deliberate hard work and sound planning on the part of its combined and united two great peoples. Personally, may I say what a great joy and pleasure it is to me to be here today, and to thank you on behalf of my wife and my daughter for the magnificent welcome you have given us. And I would like again to add my thanks to the party which has provided such wonderful entertainment for us. All my life, at my schools, the university, in work and in games, at home and abroad, in war and in peace, it has been my privilege to be with Maoris and to have Maori friends. Nothing more than this great gathering has brought me back more fully to my native country. Nothing will give me greater satisfaction during my term of office than to do all within my power to further the common interests of and yet greater understanding between our two peoples. If I could risk saying a few words in Maori, I would say that I am talking about Kotahi Tanga. I only wish, like Sir Bernard, that I had the gift of tongues. I have, though, however, an even more primitive sense, the sense of feeling. This, I can assure you, I have in full measure tonight. And from that full measure, I, on this New Zealand day at Waitangi, wish you all everything of the best, health, happiness, and dare I say it, prosperity for the coming year.
As the sounds of the chanting died away, the retreat was mounted by the naval detachment, and the ceremony came to an end. The overhead lights were dimmed, and we could see, in dotted outline on the bay, the floodlit ships from the Royal New Zealand Navy. The pageantry of Waitangi 1968 was over. This is your narrator, Bill Parker, and for your producer, Selwyn Murusei, tēnā koutou I roto I ngā rāwhakamaharatanga ki te hainatangai I te tiriti o Waitangi. Good night.